Okay, I'm Jennifer Shoemaker. I'm a psychology professor at Abilene Christian University. And what we did was we came in and we were talking about what are the challenges to thriving. And thriving is a very particular word that we use in positive psychology, especially in what's called positive youth development, to think about how do we help children and adolescents, especially adolescents, because there's a lot of identity development going on during that time. So how do we help them thrive and do well instead of just thinking about, oh, I just got to get them through this? You know, that's a really different mindset. And So I'm a school psychologist. I've worked with children and adolescents for the past 20 years, and I have three daughters, and I live with two teenagers right now. So I have a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, and an 11-year-old. And sometimes that's something that I think we have to think about is thriving versus let's just get through this. So today, I'm going to do a tiny little bit of a review with what we talked about yesterday, because I know not everybody was here, just to set the groundwork. And then we're going to move into some strategies. What do we do to kind of make this a reality for our kids? And we'll talk about some really practical strategies that we can use. So just as a review, the challenges that we talked about for thriving were sexualization, a focus on fame, social media, consumerism, and violence. And the interesting thing, as I was thinking about this and talking with you guys about this yesterday and with a friend of mine about it yesterday as well, is that a lot of this is wrapped up in technology use and just kind of the things that are brought into our world in a different way than they would have been before if we didn't have access to this kind of mobile technology, especially because it brings some things into our worlds on a regular basis, especially for children because they do use these. And so yesterday someone said, well, you know, that could be good that we become aware of these things. And I think that's true. So the key is helping them, the children and the adolescents, develop the skills to learn how to deal with this. So it's a challenge, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily has to be a bad thing. It's a challenge, and we have to think about it and approach it thinking, okay, this is there. This is going to be in their lives. Even if I can keep the smartphone away from my child, but their friend has one, you know, they're still going to get exposed to it. So what do I do about that? And these were kind of the main issues that we were talking about yesterday as being points of challenge for us. And as I was talking about kind of, so how do we conceptualize the world that our kids live in? This is a graphic representation of Yuri Bronfenbrenner's bioecological theory. This is the theory that sort of helps make sense of what we're seeing. And what it says is that bio is just the person. So that individual brings certain things to the table. They bring resources, experiences that they've had, things they've learned, strengths that they have within themselves, and weaknesses. So we both have strengths. We have strengths and weaknesses, all of us. So that person brings something to the interaction with those things that challenge us. And then also their microsystem, which is like their family, their peer group that's close with them, their school friends, their churches and communities. So those interactions they have every day, those are going to bring something to them that helps them build strength to be able to deal with those challenges. And a lot of those challenges and some of the ways we deal with them and strengths are going to be focused on these outer two systems, but sorry, the ecosystem and macro system. And I just share that with you because I think it helps understand, okay, so where are we in this system? How do I help? Sometimes it can feel overwhelming when I look at all of the challenges that children and adolescents today face. I was talking at a class in Santa Monica, at Santa Monica College this morning, and this girl came up afterwards and she said, how do you not lose hope? Like, you have three daughters. How do you not just get depressed? And I said, well, because I know that this is important. I know that that middle part can really build strengths that help children and adolescents learn how to critique what they're seeing and learn how to think of themselves as world changers and people who can look at what's being sent into them and say, I don't think I agree with that. In fact, I have another perspective. And so I know that we can build so many strengths through the individual child and through the systems that are closest to them. And that's why that theory makes so much sense to me, and it really helps me as I try to conceptualize these strategies, because once I know that, then I don't feel so hopeless or helpless. It's a much more active way of thinking about it. And then just the last kind of reminder, when we talk about thriving, we're looking at this from the perspective of positive youth development, which is a field in positive psychology that focuses on helping adolescents become thriving members of their communities. So not just getting through, but doing well, using their strengths, figuring out who they are. And these are the main, they call it the 5 C's of thriving. So when we're thinking about how do I help the kids in my life thrive, these are the things we'll be looking at. Just a quick reminder for those of you who were here yesterday, and if you weren't, this will just be kind of a quick definition for you. When we talk about competence, what we're talking about there is, can I do things well that I think are important? And the reason that's important is because some of those challenges we talked about yesterday, the sexualized media, social media, and all the different messages and pressures they're getting from their friends, but people they only know online through social media, all of that, it's going to be sending some messages about what makes you valuable that could be very different than you are sending in your own family or that you could be sending in your church community. And so one of the key things to think about, and we'll move into this when we start talking about strategies, is what messages are the kids in my life getting about what's important for them to be competent in? Because if you look at sexualized media, it's about being sexy. And it's about having lots of sexual or romantic partners. Well, that's not really what I want my daughters to think of as what makes them competent. So I'm going to be telling them something different. So that's kind of the key piece. Confidence, what that is just their overall sense of self-worth. And we can think of that in terms of what psychologists call self-efficacy, which is, you know, can I make change in the world around me? Can I affect change in my own environment? Do I have the power to make choices that matter? Character is about understanding right and wrong. And again, this one's going to be really important to think about, because what right and wrong is from what Bronfenbrenner would call our macro culture, that big giant, you know, bubble that we looked at. Those messages might be really different than what you have in your family or what you have in your church community. And so you're going to be thinking about, if I don't talk to these kids in my life about character and what character means, the messages they're going to be getting are from other people, right? So we want to be thinking about that. We want to be very clear about what we mean when we talk about character and right and wrong. Connection is about building relationships. For adolescents, especially, for younger kids too, but especially for adolescents, being able to make these kind of choices that are based on the character and the confidence and the competence that we want to see as a healthy, emotional, spiritual person, a lot of that is also going to depend on having those strong connections with peers who have the same sense of values that we do. So those connections with positive relationships are really important. And helping them start to understand, too, you know, this relationship isn't very healthy. We've all been in relationships that can be toxic, friendships or romantic relationships or whatever. And so helping them identify what's a healthy relationship look like. And then caring. This is about building a sense of empathy so that they can think about standing in another person's shoes. maybe I don't understand my friend's perspective because I've never lived that, but let me hear from you what you're feeling. Let me hear from you your own experience and how you feel right now. So learning how to do that is a really important piece of thriving, but also in being able to build those connections with others, obviously. Those two can go hand in hand. So that's sort of my quick summary of what we talked about for 45 minutes yesterday. So if you weren't here, at least you have the beginning piece of where we're starting. So the question I think that we want to ask is, how do we help promote these five C's from the perspective of families, from the perspective of churches, and other communities that are involved in children's lives? Because we are a piece of that small microsystem, so we can have a strong effect. And these are sort of some basic things that I wrote down, but then we'll talk about them more in depth. So first, focusing on the strengths of both the individual child, but also the strengths of the system. So if I'm working with children in a church community, for example, I might say, okay, what are the strengths that the family has? What kind of resources do they have? Especially if we're talking about how to deal with, you know, some of these technology issues. Do the parents know about them? Do they know about what the challenges are for the child? Maybe I need to do some education for the parent to build up the strength there. Maybe the parent doesn't, maybe they know this, but they don't really know what to do about it. So maybe I need to build up, do some education there. And the same thing with our churches or our schools. So thinking about what are the strengths that we already have, and then how can we promote those and build those? And I think that starts with purposefully identifying those strengths. It's easy, especially when you work with adolescents, to notice the weaknesses. But they all have strengths too. They have things that they're good at. They have Holy Spirit, you know, gifts of spiritual gifts that you can think about and say, what are your gifts? And one of the, I mentioned this yesterday, so I'll come back to this, but one of the greatest things I've been able to do with, I work with sixth grade girls on a weekly basis at our church, and we start off thinking about spiritual gifts. And I was telling the group yesterday, one of the most heart-rending things was I asked them, how many of you have heard of spiritual gifts? And they all raised their hand, and then I said, how many of you ever thought about your own spiritual gifts? And it was like crickets in there. Nobody, they never thought of that. Oh, I have spiritual gifts? You know, so we want them to start thinking about, what are your strengths? What do you do well? And how might you specifically use that in your daily life? So one strategy that we used with those sixth grade girls, once we had identified what some of their strengths and their gifts were, was we said, what does it look like to be an encourager in middle school? What does that look like? Like, let's put some meat on these bones. How do you do that? And it was so awesome to just hear them think aloud about how they might do that. And one of the most poignant moments of, I've been teaching them about 5 years, sixth grade girls every year. It's a different group, obviously. They keep growing up. But the one that was so interesting was this one girl who talked about having a gift of mercy, and she's looking out for the underdog. She's one of those people who's always supporting others who need help. But she said, when she started thinking about this, how does that look in your daily life as a middle school kid? She said, you know, there's this girl who I don't really like. She's kind of weird, and she always tries to talk to me in the hall. So you know that awkward hall time for middle schoolers? They're hurrying, but it's also a place of connection. And she said, I'll pretend not to hear her when she calls me. And then she said, I'm not going to do that anymore. And it just brought tears to our eyes, because what she was really talking about was pulling this into her real life. You know, what does it feel like to be that middle school kid who's being ignored every time you call someone's name. You know that people are doing that. But this little girl was able to say, if I'm really going to have mercy and show mercy and use that gift in a way that serves others and glorifies God, I got to turn around when that kid calls my name. And so to me, that's one just specific example of how we can help kind of put meat on the bones for them about how do we use our gifts. And I think that was just one of the most wonderful times that we had in that class. So let's move into talking about each one of these five C's and what might that look like. So the first is competence. And the question that I want you to think about as we're talking about how we build competence is this one. What does your church or your family or your youth group or children's group, what does it teach children about what it's important for them to be or do? What are your messages? You don't have to yell them out. But the reason I think that's important is because sometimes we start focusing on competencies or things that we think that this is really important, that you excel in sports or something like that, that when we sit back and look at it, we say, that's really not the message I wanted to send. I just sort of got into this mode of focusing on popularity. I mean, I've seen families do that, and they didn't really mean to do that. It just sort of became a component of who they were.
I grew up in a family of teachers, so academics has always mm-hmm. been very important. And so with my children, academics has been important. And one day I read this blog, and some of you may have read it, although I don't remember what the blog was. But it was this letter. I mean, I saw it on Facebook, but she read this letter to her children for the first day of school mm-hmm. and said something in the letter like, I don't care about how well you do in school. I want you to be brave enough to be kind to the person that no one is kind to. Be brave enough to sit with the child no one sits with. And it just really resonated with me because it brought home that point to me of what am I teaching my mm-hmm. kids? This is what I want to teach my kids. Be brave. Mm-hmm. You can be brave right now and be courageous right now in showing kindness.
Right.
Because it does take bravery to show kindness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've tried to really switch that message, but I think that this is a great point because the culture seeps into us
yes.
too. And I would worry about, is anyone sitting with my child instead of thinking, are
yes.
they sitting
right.
with someone else?
And we do that in our youth groups too sometimes, or our children's groups too. We'll get focused on, I don't know, competition. Really? Is that really what we want to be teaching here? But we just didn't stop and take a step back and say, oh, maybe that isn't what I want them to learn. So that's such a perfect example. Thank you for sharing that with us. Any other kind of examples like that?
Mm-hmm. I'm a youth minister, and one of the things over the years that I've developed is I tell my kids every other time I'm with them, you are calculating forces for good.
Mm, I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, one of the cool things about thriving is what it does is it puts the child in the seat of being an agent instead of being this passive recipient of all those things that are coming at them. It's you are here. I always talk about it in terms of being world changers. You are here to make a difference. You are a world changer. And this is how you learn to do that, is by looking at things from a different perspective. I like that. So that's a question we want to keep asking, is what are we focusing on? And so some just specific examples that I have of things that we could do are have open and purposeful conversations about what makes a person valuable. Because you know the kids in your home, the kids in your youth group, the kids in your community, and you're getting messages about what makes them valuable from outside. And it's not the same messages that we probably want to send about kindness, about courage to do the right thing, about using your gifts, even when it's hard. You know, you're a child of God, and this is what makes you valuable. They're getting a lot of different kind of messages. So just really talking about that openly. And then critiquing other representations of value. You know, what do you think about that? We just watched a movie together. What was the message? You know, what do you think about that particular scene even, and what just happened there? So that you give them the chance to think through some of those messages that they're getting. And this was one of my favorites, is once you've had some of those conversations and you're building this idea of being a world changer, give them opportunities to share their own values with others, whether that's through service in your community or in your church. Or this one that I wrote down is Bunnies and Bears. This was a friend of mine who's actually in college now, but when she was, I think she was about 10, she was watching a commercial about St. Jude's Children's Hospital, and she said, "What is that? You know, it's like kids are sick," and she didn't really know about all that. And then she asked her mom if she would take her to a children's hospital, so she took her to Cook's Children's Hospital, and she just realized all these kids who were in need that she had no idea that there were kids that were sick in the hospital because she'd never confronted that before. And so her mom and her started talking about, it was coming up on Easter, and she loved Easter. It was a big holiday for their family. And she said, "What about Easter for those kids that are in the hospital? What happened?" And they were like, "Well, you know, it depends on their families and what they do." So she started this project called Bunnies and Bears. And what she did was she just started a collection. And she was collecting stuffed animals, bunnies and bears, usually bunnies because bears were called prayer bears and they went at a different time of the year. So she did the bunnies. And then they had this big delivery to the hospital, and they went around to every child that was in the hospital, and they gave them this gift, and they talked with them. And it was just an amazing project that served across the years, because now she's in college. So that started when she was, 10. So for the past 10 years, she's had this program that's gone and served hundreds and hundreds of children who were in pain and in need, and just gave them something special. Wow, what an amazing opportunity that her mom could have just said, "Oh, no, we're not going to do that. That's too hard." And that's a huge undertaking. But there are other small ways that we can help our kids think about how do we share our values. Even just like my little friend who said, "I'm not going to ignore that girl anymore." You know, that little change can make a difference. And one of the activities that I wanted to introduce here, because what we want to think about is starting to help children and adolescents see themselves as people who make decisions about themselves and what happens with them. And so we call that agency in psychology speak. But one of the great ways that we can do this is with this activity, which I call "It's Just a Hug." So as I'm helping a child, especially children, because this can be something that makes sense to them, think about, if you're in a situation where a friend doesn't want you to hug them, and it hurts your feelings, and you're really tempted to force a hug, right? You want to just go make a hug, I want to hug you. But I want them to start thinking about agency of both themselves and other people. I'm also wanting them, because we talked about that sexualized media, I also want them to start thinking about consent and what does it mean to consent to physical behaviors with one another. So this is a really good way to start that with our young kids. So I'll ask them, "Well, do you always like to be hugged? Do you always want to be hugged?" And usually they say, "Well, no, not every time someone wants to hug me." So how does it feel if you don't want to be hugged and somebody forces that upon you? And I let them kind of think about that and talk about that feeling of sort of lack of control over their own body and their own decision making. And so then we move to, so when you have a friend who doesn't want that hug, how do you think they feel if you hug them? And they go, "Oh, Yeah, that doesn't feel too good to have something forced upon you. And then we do some brainstorming about what else might we do. So if I want to show affection with someone who doesn't want that, maybe we could do a hand squeeze. But if they don't want any kind of physical affection, I can just say something kind. I can share a nice word. And this seems like such a small thing, but when we think about consent, which is a huge issue in colleges right now, I'm on a college campus, and this is the kind of thing that we're having to talk to our students about a lot, and you hear all in the news about sexual assaults and people saying, well, I didn't know. Well, let's start here. Let's start with the hug when they're younger and help them start thinking about this type of thing. So that's one example of an activity, and the reason I like that is it builds confidence in feeling like I'm valuable, that person is valuable, and we get to make decisions about what happens with our own bodies together. The next one is confidence. We talked about this being self-efficacy and overall sense of self-worth. And, you know, we come back to that world changer idea. Or what was the phrase that you used?
Your calculated forces for good.
Calculated forces for good. I love that. So we want to give them that idea. You can make a difference. So we want them to be able to see themselves as people who can affect change in the world around them. When they can see themselves that way, they can see themselves as those world changers or those calculated forces for good. So how do we do that is the question. How do we help them develop that confidence? And this is just kind of some general strategies. And then I'm going to talk specifically a little bit about one of the big ones that has to do with some of the sexualized messages that our kids are getting, which is sexual self-efficacy. So strategies for supporting confidence, providing opportunities for success, and areas of strength and in areas of service. So we talked about our little girl earlier who had this gift of mercy. And how does that look in her daily life? So how might we weave some of these strengths that our students have, once we've identified those, into things like our youth group activities? How might we use specific strengths in different ways during our mission trips, for example. Because we do that in our grown-up trips, don't we? The people who have grips of administration will say, I'll be in charge of that. You know, I mean, we do that ourselves because we know what our strengths are. Someone who wants to organize things, they're going to do this. The person who likes to be out amongst people serving, they're going to be doing that. So if we can start thinking about that with our children, giving them opportunities to serve in ways that meet their strengths, the first step for that is knowing what those strengths are, right? So helping them identify that, and then we have to be pretty purposeful about how do I help build that and give them an opportunity to serve in the way that meets their strength. Scaffolding for building strengths. That could be, when we talk about scaffolding from a psychology perspective, what we're talking about is kind of moving a child up a ladder as far as their skills and abilities go. So I might think about my little girl who has the gift of mercy. Hey, her first step was talking to the person at school. What might be the next step? Maybe during a mission trip there would be certain things that I would help her do, or maybe during a youth activity. So you can consider that idea of we're going to continue to grow spiritually, which is so exciting, right? I mean, think about the kids in your youth group and the variety of gifts the kids in your youth group have, or the kids in your community, or in your own family. So I have three daughters. They're all very different, but they all have their own set of strengths. And I find myself thinking, okay, this one got to use that, but you know, this one, I'm not sure she's been able to do that yet. How can I help her use her strength in a way that she can see herself as a world changer, a difference maker? And then giving them specific feedback about how they did. that's hard sometimes, but it can be so helpful. I mean, we all need that. So if you're mentoring, especially if you're in a close mentoring relationship, you can talk about, you know, I loved the way you did this. What did you like about it? What was hard for you? How might you do it differently next time? That's always a great question, because feedback sounds like I'm going to tell you, next time you should do this. And that doesn't ever feel good, right? Like that kind of feedback. But if we can say, what do you think you might do differently next time? That again puts them in the driver's seat of using their gifts in a way that's very agentic. I'm going to let God use my gifts to serve others. And I want to be thinking about what are my strengths so that I can do that. So I am, because I have a little more than I think we have time for. So I'm going to try to move through and then maybe come back to some of the ones that take a little more time. But first, I wanted to talk about a conversation starter. So how do we help our children build that confidence? A lot of time it's with using this kind of analysis. Asking good questions. So if you think about media, for example, one of the questions I ask my children almost every time we watch something was, what did you think about the choices that character made? So we, for example, Brave. My youngest daughter loved Brave when it came out. Well, what did you think about how Merida did that? What about her mom? What about her dad? You know, the choices that they're making. And we're starting to analyze and ask questions about that. Help them gain knowledge so that they can think about how to make good choices. So you can give them feedback. Once you've heard what they think, you can share what you think. The good thing here is the most important thing, I think, is to remember you don't want to lecture. You just want to be sharing ideas with each other. My daughter said the most, like to me, it was something I hadn't even thought of when we were talking about Brave. So she was probably 8 when that movie came out, 8 or 9. And she loved it. And we were talking about it. And what did you like about it? What didn't you like? What did you think of Merida's choices? What could she have done differently? And she said, you know what I loved was the way, this is interesting. She was talking about the Disney films and how usually there's like a prince that saves the day. But she said it was Merida and her family. They worked together to save the day. And I was like, she was right. And I hadn't really thought of it that way, because the mom had to do something, the dad had to do something, Merida had to do something. So they worked as a unit together to make a difference. And I thought, that's a pretty cool thing for her to see, as a family working together. So getting them the chance to kind of visualize that, talk it through, put it into context, those are all important components. The other thing about contextualizing, I'll just say real quick, if we're talking about media especially, but also if we're talking about maybe, well, social media, technology, those kind of different voices that might be coming in, is to help them think about whose voice am I hearing? So what is the message they're trying to share? And do I agree with that? Because a lot of times when you're getting messages, these overall messages, the assumption is just that, oh, maybe that's what I should think. Instead, we want them to say, what are they trying to say to me? And do I agree with that perspective or that worldview? You know, maybe not. And so we want them to think about that. And contextualizing who is the messenger is really important, especially when we think about media. So I always like to ask, I started off with my kids early saying, they're trying to sell you something. I'm trying to help you grow up to be a strong person. So sometimes we're going to have different perspectives about what makes you valuable and about what you need to do to be successful and things like that. Really different perspectives if I'm trying to sell you something or if I'm trying to raise you to be a world changer.
Question.
Uh-huh.
So do you sit and watch everything that your girls watch?
I watch a lot of what they watch. And I have to say, it can be kind of exhausting. And I try to read the books that they read. I think the most important thing is to probably do this when they're younger. Because what happens when they get older is that then they'll come and talk to you about it once they've sort of started doing this with you. And so now I have a 15-year-old, and I don't watch every single thing she watches because I just couldn't keep up with it, with her and you know, the other two. So, but they'll come and talk to me. They'll say, I saw this, and I want to talk about it. I don't know what I think about this. And it's really interesting because they, of course, their friends are watching these things too. And so they're saying, so-and-so really liked this movie, but I didn't like it, and I'm not sure why. So we talk about it. So I think if you start early and kind of put in a lot of time on the front end, then you've trained them to start being these kind of critics. That's why I said smart critics and consumers, because we want them to be thinking instead of passively receiving. So if they can start thinking about that earlier, then they're more likely to come to you later.
Do you usually do it right after the movie's over?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends on if they were with me or if they went to someone's house. But they're pretty good about doing that. It's really interesting because all three of them do that with different things.
You got girls. I got three boys. So.
Yeah, getting them talking and thinking. Yeah. My middle daughter was really interesting because she brought a music video to me, and she said, okay, have y'all seen the video to Chandelier? So it's a little girl who's a dancer, and she's in this kind of nude bodysuit doing this dance. And it's a video that's about identity and struggle and challenge. And anyway, my daughter said, she's a dancer, my daughter is. She said, all these people are saying this video is about sex, that it's sexy. And she said, I don't think that's what it's about. And so she wanted me to watch it with her, and we talked. So she, Mom, will you watch this video with me, and let's talk about what is this about? And I thought, wow, I'm so happy that we did this when you were younger, because I wouldn't have known. I didn't even know she'd seen that video. Because if you have access to smartphones or your friends do, you're going to see that kind of stuff that I may not know about. So I think the key is just keeping the conversation going so that they come back to you when they have those questions. That's a really good, really good question. Okay, let's see. I always plan too much for this time. So I know what I'll do. I'll skip to, let me tell you this, and then I'll skip to an example. So when we're talking about sexualized media, social media, a lot of the messages that children and adolescents, especially adolescents, are starting to get that are focused on sexuality and the importance of sexuality as making them valuable, we're going to want to help them build what's called sexual self-efficacy. And, you know, I said self-efficacy is the ability to believe that you can make change. So this is the belief and the skills to be able to make choices about your own sexual behaviors, what does and doesn't happen, that kind of thing. And again, this is a huge issue right now with us having issues of sexual assault on a lot of college campuses and high schools as well. And so that's why it matters, because we want them to be able to say, here's my choice, here's what I want to do, here's what I don't want to do. And I know I have the skills to be able to say yes or no to things, and how to ask for consent myself and how to withhold consent and that sort of thing. Hugely important. One of the things that I've found as I've done my research, I've been asking adolescents a lot of questions about this, and one of the things that a lot of them said was that, especially boys, their parents don't talk to them about this. They don't say, hey, you know, if you want to go out with someone, here's how you ask them, and if they say no, they're not interested, you back off. And girls don't hear that too much either. My oldest daughter, one of my, proudest moments was this boy asked her out on a date, and she just said no. She wasn't interested. And her friends were so shocked. Why would you say no? So when we're talking about this, it's not just about sexuality. It's about all those romantic behaviors that go on, so that you have the ability to say, I'm not interested in doing that, even if it's just going on a date. She was, one of my daughters was talking to me about a boy who is a friend who likes to hug people. And she's like, I don't really want to be hugged. And I said, just tell them that. Say, no, thank you. I don't really want to hug you. You're my friend, but I don't want to do that. We got to help them think about that. So how do we build it? I'm just going to give you one example because we are running out of time. But I do have a lot of this. So if you're interested, let me know, because from the time they're little, this is something we can be building on. But one of the examples I had has to do with using a piece of media. Have any of you guys seen the movie Valentine's Day? So if you use, I just use that as an example, but you could use a lot of different pieces of media. There's a scene in that movie where there's this relationship, a boy and a girl who've been dating, and they're trying to make some decisions about their physical relationship. And so you can use pieces of media like that. You know, you could even use Brave and the fact that Merida was going to be married off to some guy and she shot an arrow and she decided not to do that. That's a really interesting idea. So you can do this with little kids. You can do it with older kids. Your piece of media is going to look different. But what you want to ask them is, what do you think about that choice? Did each partner consent to whatever that behavior was? How do you know they consented? And you're going to be, what you're wanting to do is start getting them to think about this idea of how do you give consent, how do you withhold consent, how do you ask other people for consent. And that's all going to be focused around this kind of question that you can use very easily with a piece of media from a young age all the way up to a more mature piece. So it depends on how old the kids are that you're working with. But this is so crucial. And the kids that I've interviewed, one of the things they've said is we want to be able to talk about the messages that we're getting from the media. We want to talk about these at church. We want to talk about these at home. But oftentimes, nobody wants to talk about it with us because it's uncomfortable. And so we, as adults who are in kids' lives, we've got to get more comfortable with having those conversations and giving them a place to talk with us and ask us questions, because otherwise, who are they getting their advice from? Right? Another 15-year-old, maybe. Or the media or common, you know, culture, which may have a totally different view than we do, which goes to our ideas about character. And I may have to end here so that I can leave us a couple minutes for questions and conversation, but one of the really important things that we want to do is focus on talking about what is important to us. What do we see as right and wrong? So that it's really clear to those adolescents, especially when they're looking at one message, that that's going to be in opposition to what their family believes or what their church believes. And how are they learning moral standards? A lot of times it's going to be through those media pieces. So we've got to help them think through that and talk about, what did you think about that choice that person made that was very public and visible? How does that compare? And then living counterculturally is going to be a huge perspective that we're going to help them think about. There's a movement, I can't remember what those brothers' name is, but they have this book they wrote that's Do Something That Matters. I think that's what it's called. Have you guys heard of that?
Do Hard Things.
That's right. And then they have a website. And, you know, so these, especially adolescents, they are in a place in their lives where they're finding their identity. They're really ready to see themselves as world changers. If we can harness that and help them see themselves as countercultural, what's your phrase again?
Calculated forces for good.
Forces for good. I love that. If we can help them do that, that's huge. They're going to be ready to go. So using that developmental strength that they have and helping them have these kinds of conversations that critique all these different messages that we're getting are going to be huge for moving them into this kind of countercultural behavior that we want to see from them. Any questions before we wrap up? Thoughts, comments? Yes?
The idea of consent being a problem on college campuses. Mm-hmm. Is this a growing problem, or has this been there consistently? Or?
It's one of those things that it's hard to say if it's growing, because a lot of times those things used to be hidden. So if sexual assaults occur on campus, that's a really bad thing for, I'm not going to send my daughter there, right? And no one else wants to either. And so if people know their kids are getting sexually assaulted, then they're going to lose business. So what's happened lately, though, is because of Title IX, you have to report those. So there's more pressure to report. And that's why I think this has blown up so much with these, like, fraternity houses and things like that, is because they're having to report it. So whether or not it's always happened, my guess is it has in a lot of ways, which is why we've got to talk about consent with kids. As, you know, if you're a bystander, what do you do when you see somebody who looks like they're not consenting? How do you, if you're one of those people who's involved, how do you know that that person wants to do this? How do you make sure you're both on the same page? You know, how do you ask for help or tell someone, I am not okay with this? You know, all of those are so wrapped up together. And we can start that in an early conversation. Other thoughts, questions, as we wrap up? I wanted to share this with you. I love this quote from Parker Palmer. He says, "The people who plant the seeds of movements make a critical decision. They decide to live divided no more. They decide no longer to act on the outside in a way that contradicts some truth about themselves that they hold deeply on the inside. They decide to claim authentic selfhood and act it out, and their decisions ripple out to transform the society in which they live." And I think that's what we want for our kids. We want them to see their strengths, to identify those, and to be supported in those by us, so that they can move out and see themselves as people who can make a difference. Thank you guys for being here. I appreciate your time.
Feel free to come by and talk to us.